Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to discuss the offense from that Week 14 loss to the Steelers. Joining me to do that is my friend Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Always good to talk to you, even if it's after a disappointing loss like this one.
Certainly a bad one, a critical division game, a flurry of officiating controversy in this game. Just multiple calls that did not go the Ravens' way, rightly or wrongly. We're going to try and minimize the talk about that. I don't think you can really have a discussion about that game without some discussion of that, but we had some of it on the defensive show to be sure. I thought, you know, if you're looking for some positives for the Ravens, they did make kind of a game comeback on offense from quarter two on. And then on defense, certainly in the fourth quarter, they played very tight defense and stopped the Steelers three consecutive times with three and outs. But from beginning with the last drive of the second quarter, they drove down the field and got into the red zone every single drive, with the exception of the last one when the clock ran out on them.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think it was really encouraging to kind of see, you know, pretty much the end of the first half through the rest of the game, the offense really looked like a traditional Ravens offense. They were moving the ball. They were moving the ball, running the ball, and passing. It was a good mixture. Lamar got a little bit more involved with designed runs. He kept the ball a couple of times on the read option, which we have seen very little of these last few weeks. And, you know, that kind of opens up, you know, the for the running backs. It opened up holes for Henry, and, you know, even on the big play with Keaton, you know, whenever Lamar's an actual threat to run the ball, that's really when the running back, it opens up for the running backs, and you really see a dynamic running game. So that was encouraging to see. You know, Lamar's still not there passing yet. You know, there's, you know, some mechanical flaws, you know, in there that, you know, might be injury related or, you know, maybe something else. But it is good to see kind of the running game coming back, though.
Yeah, it's certainly the worst slump of his career right now. He's probably going through as a player in general. It's the first time he's ever had really a multi-game. You know, he's gone four games now with one touchdown, and I don't even know how many turnovers, but it's a fair number. About three interceptions and a couple fumbles at least on top of that.
Well, yeah, one passing and like six turnovers last four games, and then he had also the run touchdown. So, but not a lot of production. This is probably the longest slump he's had in his career. Sure, he's very frustrated.
He did have an interception slump in 21 that was bad, but this was you hit, I think, on the most important point, and it's a part that I don't think people realize just how critical a component is for the Ravens offense, is that the Lamar Jackson read option with anybody, but particularly with Derrick Henry, is the most dangerous weapon in the entire game of football. When it's with anybody, it's one of the more dangerous weapons in all of football. Lamar makes every running back better, and he just is not making running backs better this year because other teams are not respecting his running ability. They're crashing automatically on Henry because they know that's where the ball's likely to end up. And Lamar hasn't been making them pay for those decisions up front. The read option is a way to take an additional defender completely out of the play. In fact, really two, because you have an unblocked guy that has to commit, and then you have another guy that has to really be assigned to Lamar. So if you're talking about relative to a normal quarterback, it's really you get a big advantage out of having him on the field.
Right. I mean, you could really kind of see the difference in the first half and the second half. In the first half, you could see T.J. Watt and Hightower, they would just crash right down the line on that read option. They weren't even paying attention to Lamar at all, and they would just crash and T.J. Watt probably got a couple of tackle for losses on Henry on those. And I mean, that's what happens when you leave somebody unblocked. Even the backside defensive end can run down a power play or, you know, an inside run like that pretty easily for a tackle for loss. But if he has to pause and, you know, respect the possibility that the quarterback keeps it and runs – I mean, even if it's not a super mobile guy like Lamar, but just a quarterback with average athleticism, if he's going to keep it and run for, you know, 6 or 7 yards, the defensive end has to respect that and pause for just a second. And that you know, split second can allow your running back to get, you know, through a hole and, you know, make a big play. But yeah, when they're not respecting it, it's just a regular play and you're not blocking the defensive end, which is a recipe for disaster in your running
game. Right. Yeah, and it's you'll see all kinds of times the defense will try and create an extra edge defender to create a free runner off the edge. It's usually a safety. We see it with Hamilton. We see it with, you know, certainly Ed Reed did it all the time. He'd creep right up the line of scrimmage very effectively, time up the snap, be gone off the edge and make a tackle for a loss of one or no gain kind of thing by penetrating into the backfield off the edge. So, you know, if they're trying to manufacture it, the offense doesn't want it. That should be a good reason. But anyway, I did like the fact that they moved that. They won the snap count dramatically in this game. It was the first time since I think it was the Rams game. They won it decisively. They lost that game too. But they at least their defense was kept rested, kept off the field. And in the fourth quarter, they certainly had something.
Yeah, and it was encouraging to see them, you know, get a lot of crucial stops in that fourth quarter to keep us in the game and keep it in one score game to give us an opportunity to kind of sneak away with the win there. But unfortunately, you know, things didn't pan out offensively to get that, you know, last touchdown. But
right. We're going to need to go through the red zone failures individually here. That's really the story of this game in a lot of ways for the Ravens. They only scored 2 of 6 times in the red zone. And you know, by extension, probably the problem with the Ravens offense this season, which is 30th now in the National Football League in red zone percentage at around 44% for the year. Whereas last year they were at 74%, I believe, but number one in the entire NFL. Yep. That is a chasm-like difference. And a lot of that is basically the difference between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, that explains the difference between last year's team and this year's team. It's being able to convert touchdowns in the red zone is vitally important. They were great at it last year, and they've been pretty poor at it this year. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, I mean, you know, like we were talking about, Lamar being injured and not being fully healthy is a big reason, a big part of that. But you know, there's also, you know, failures all around on the offense to go with it too.
Yeah, there are a lot of other problems, and in some of the red zone things we'll see, it wasn't all the offensive line, it wasn't the running backs, it wasn't all Lamar. There were a lot of blame certainly to hand out in this game. I did think Lamar looked a little more mobile in this game. The fact that we did see some read option plays was certainly good. The fact that, you know, he was keeping on more of those was certainly a very good sign. That's probably the most important sign, is that he's the actual one who gets the football after the mesh point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Really bad first half for the Ravens. Ended them with them down just 8 points, I think 17-9 at the half after they scored the touchdown late, which was the beginning of a very long comeback effort. But they had gotten themselves into a 17-3 hole before that. After being up 3-0, the Steelers scored 17 unanswered, and lots of big plays for that Steeler offense. This is you know, a show about the Ravens offense, so we don't have to talk about it too much. But the Aaron Rodgers was just dropping the ball in the bucket like he hadn't done in the last month, and that's very, very frustrating. And even the pressures that the Ravens got were not super high quality pressures. They got a batted ball by Okoye that was almost an interception, might have been. They got a one quarterback hit where Tremont Jones just basically slid into his legs. It's not even visible on the TV that he knocked him down. And other than that, I mean, all they got was proximity pressure in this game, where they got close enough to not have Rodgers maybe throwing normally, but he still was able to get rid of the ball fairly quickly or early in the pressure. So, which is different than while he's getting hit, say, or after, you know, having to take the sack. Definitely not a high quality of pressure that the Ravens got, even though they didn't do too terribly in terms of Rodgers' opportunity set overall.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Mike Green, I think, had a couple of pressures. There was one he had Rodgers, and Rodgers was able to just duck under it, duck under the sack and escape. So they were, but yeah, Rodgers was a little bit too comfortable in that pocket. I mean, especially considering, I think Andrews Pete was like their third string tackle or something. Oh yeah,
he's terrible.
Yeah, and he was out there and he got hurt and he left the game. I don't think he came back. So they were really down and you just weren't able to get enough pressure, you know, to kind of, you know, force a turnover here or there. Or if you want to say they did force a turnover, it just was just an awful call by the referees to reverse it.
Yeah, that was so unusual, but very frustrating. I'm not aware that the quarterback is offered any special protections different from any other receiver in terms of him having to catch that football and go through all the acts that they require of a wide receiver, a tight end, or a defender, for that matter.
Exactly. Aaron Rodgers is no different from if that ball was 20 yards downfield with a jump ball between a receiver and a defensive back. There's literally no difference. If, you know, they're fighting for the ball 20 yards downfield and the receiver doesn't control the ball to the ground, like it's either incomplete or, you know, as it turned out, the defensive back wrestles it away. It's the exact same thing with Rodgers. There's no difference. And yeah, he doesn't get any extra, you know, protections on that. Literally, like if one of the defensive, you know, like a defensive end just crashed and landed on him, which would typically be a roughing the passer penalty, right, because he's a receiver in that situation, it's not even that. So, right. Yeah.
There's nothing that stops the play early. There's nothing if it was an offensive lineman, just because it's a big guy catching the ball, not trying to advance it, any of those things that might be true or might not, but they might be true. If he grabs the ball, goes to a knee, that's not the end of the play. He's got to still maintain through contact with the ground that football. And that's the part that Rodgers didn't do. And that was there was no whistle blown on the play. Okay, for starters. So I didn't think you were supposed to reestablish a point at which the play is over, sort of thing, but maybe that's within the precepts of review. But if you do that and you let the play go, then you've got to at least understand that he still has the same responsibilities to secure the football all the way to the ground. And he just didn't do it. So right. It's probably the call I'm most frustrated about. I'm also frustrated by the penalty, which the league has now come to the Ravens and said they were in error on the call. So, yeah.
Those were the two worst. I thought the likely call was bad too. And the thing is, it's, you know, you can tell me that likely wasn't a catch, but you can't tell me that likely wasn't a catch. But Aaron Rodgers was.
Right, exactly.
Either both of them were catches or both of them were not catches. But you can't tell me one was and one wasn't, you know, so.
With you all the way on that, you know that. All right, so the Ravens are now a marginal divisional underdog. They still do hold their destiny in their own hands. If they win the next four, they win the North, which is still, that's a good place to be. We hope that they can maintain that, because a loss to the Bengals right now would be utterly devastating, because it would effectively mean they'd need to catch up an extra game on the Steelers as well if they lost this. So they've got to win this, or then they're going to have to be depending on a lot of help. Either the Browns have got to beat the Steelers, which puts them back in the tiebreaker advantage, or the Steelers have to lose multiple games. Either it's going to be very difficult, obviously, if the Ravens do not beat the Bengals coming up this Sunday. They're a slight favorite in that game, but you know, the Ravens, I look at it this way. They're going not on the road, but they're going to play three out of four on the road. They're going to play under winter circumstances in all four games, because it's the Baltimore, it's a night game. So they're playing Cincinnati. I don't care what time of day, you don't want to play in Cincinnati this time of year. Pittsburgh this time of year is awful, and Green Bay. It just doesn't get much worse for a Florida quarterback, I wouldn't think. I know he's got a great record, throwing all the ball all over the field and a lot of touchdowns and few interceptions, and a good winning record in December, but still.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this is, I think the most disappointing thing for me was these last two games, the Bengals game and the Steelers game, were both at home. Both are arguably the easiest games you had on your schedule. And a split would have been would have been acceptable. You would expect to win both of those games, and to lose both of these games is, you know, pretty devastating. Devastating to obviously to their playoff chances. Now it's pretty much win the North or bust, and it's just it's really disappointing.
These will be the two that'll sting for a long time if the Ravens don't make it this year. They're gonna think about how close they were. There may be a big upset, some mediocre team, or maybe the Bills win the Super Bowl this year because they they come from a wild card spot, and the rest of the AFC has proved to be frauds in the playoffs. This will be a big opportunity missed. Mm-hmm. And there's no Chiefs in the playoffs this year. The Bills are going to be on the road if they play Baltimore. It appears, the Ravens, obviously, if they win their four games, will have something to say about that, because they'll create an opportunity for Buffalo to beat New England in the division. But it still appears the Bills are likely to play on the road. Boy, is this an opportunity.
Ugh. Yeah. Real disappointing. Yeah. I don't know anybody's a real believer in New England or Denver yet. I mean, obviously they've played really well. They have great records, but I'm not necessarily believing them. This should be 23 or 24 Ravens would be runaway favorites for the AFC.
Right.
This version of it is, we're hoping to just get in.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And then, open that. I mean, it was the 2012 Ravens. They were just hoping to get in, and they did. And then they made hay once they got there, but, it is what it is. I don't know what's more bothersome of kind of the Ravens' big three problems right now. And I'm not including the offensive line in this. The offensive line, they could fix that, and it still wouldn't make the team right if Lamar remains hurt. If the offensive line played 20% better, okay, if 20 points higher in grade level, let's say, meaning everybody's playing at a let's call it a B+ level instead of a C- level, okay? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make enough difference to make Lamar back into the player he was, unless Lamar's mobility is back. And that's where I think, two-thirds of the problems of the Ravens are. They lost consecutive divisional games, which is, the point you made, or that they're 6-7 now after the schedule they have played, which, that of all the things, I think is probably the thing I'm least upset about. They did play a murderous first six games. It was a mm-hmm. tough run, and Lamar being injured really skewered their chances nice and early of this, and they made a game comeback, big win against the Bears with Tyler Huntley. And you thought maybe, and they put together the five-game winning streak, took the lead in the AFC North. I just didn't see them looking back from that point. And 2 weeks later, here we are at 6-7, having just lost these two games. Ugh.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We'll stop wallowing on our own pity here for a while. We talked about winning the snap count. It's just their fourth game of 60-plus snaps out of 13 games. The average number of snaps in the league this year is down a little, but it's still over 61. So, that's ridiculous. I mean, it shouldn't happen. It is funny that Pittsburgh is one of the teams that's actually worst. And I believe that they're worse in both categories, both offensive snaps and opposing offensive snaps. They're worse in both. And so the Steelers lose a big one to us, and they really have fallen into, 1-32 or 32-32 kind of range for offensive snaps played and offensive snaps allowed.
Right, yeah. And it's, it's really surprising and disappointing, because this is the team throughout Lamar's tenure has generally significantly outsnapped their opponents. It's been one of the trademarks of this team, is being able to run 65, 70 plus plays, mm-hmm. Outsnap the opponent by 15 or 20 snaps a game. And it's been totally flipped this year. It's, This is bizarro Ravens right now with everything that's going on.
Yeah, it sure is. And it's very frustrating, no doubt about it. Series efficiency, which has been, you know, drive success rate is, they call it DSR. I don't like that because it's really series success rate is what they measure with DSR. And that's the percentage of times you get a first down or a touchdown on every first, subsequent to every first down you get, including a new possession of the football to start a drive. And the Ravens had been, they'd been around 71%. This game, they were better, and it wasn't bad. That certainly wasn't the problem in this game. Let me put it this way. They moved the ball well. They ran the ball very well in this game. You know, a lot of carries, 40, I think they ran the ball 40 times in this game for 5.4 yards per carry. So no problem. That's Ravens football. That's what we want to see. The Steelers didn't look big enough to stop the Ravens. Patrick Queen, you know, contributed his normal 4 missed tackles in the game. Their defensive line in a lot of ways was not big enough. Some people said that Derek Harmon was a difference maker. I mean, Derek Harmon is another 300-pound guy who's one extra kind of smallish body on the inside of that Steelers front. Hayward is a still
that's he's quite, still excellent.
He's the man.
Yeah.
And TJ Watt is a you know decent run defender, and Highsmith is a good player generally speaking, including a decent run defender. But they just don't have the size inside to match up against the Ravens. And the Ravens were getting really good push on that first drive. You could see, I mean, one of the things I'm going to come back to this when we talk about the offensive line in part two. But Daniel Faalele in this game on the very watch the first five plays of this game, and you'll see him have three highlight blocks. As I scored it, and you might score it slightly different, but he's got a ton of push. He gets it's a really clean combination block that looked outstanding. Where he helps with a block at level one, moves up to level two, makes a very clean block. And he had another one that he just pushed his own guy 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, which that just really does not happen. But it was Yaya Black on the third play of the game, which is a 6-yard run. He pushed Yaya Black 10 yards, you know, off the line of scrimmage, which is very, very unusual. In the NFL these days, you just don't win your one-on-one matchups like that.
We've seen, you know, the offensive line really look like they're dominating. They can dominate a defensive front, you know, in that first drive or so. And then for whatever reason, it doesn't continue on throughout the game. But yes, there are times where they look like, boy, they're going to really maul this team today. And they did a lot. I mean, like you said, they ran for over 200 yards. Like, this was, in a lot of ways, a typical Ravens type of game. But, yeah.
Nothing has had the feeling this year that there is an easy 200-yard game. That they rack up 25 yards rushing on the first drive. And you say, okay, that was okay. It wasn't really great Ravens football to only get 25 yards. But you project that out, and mm-hmm. they get 250 yards in a game doing that. And I haven't felt like any yards have come easily for Derrick Henry this year. I mean, he's got a decent yardage total. It's not like his yards per carry are terrible. It's just, it's all been tough. And in particular, it's been tough when it's been a high leverage down, you know, third and one, third and two, third and three. It's been really tough running downs for the Ravens. And this game at one of the critical junctures, they had a third and two. And they had an illegal formation penalty on the play that would have messed it up, but they you know run for minus 3 yards, and what the hell?
It just got blown up, and I mean even the ones that they get, it's you don't see when it's third and one or fourth and one on a short yardage, you don't see Derrick Henry going to the outside. They run. You know, outside counter plays and little tosses to the outside to get a, you know, to get one or two yards, as opposed to just, you know, running in the B or C gap or A gap and just plow ahead with your big man as a running back. And nothing is easy for him. And you know, people are, you know, making rumors that he's slowing down. Maybe he's a half step slower than last year, but he's still really, really good. And I mean, I think, you know, the difference from last year to this year is it just, you know, Lamar being that run threat and a lot of teams not respecting it right now. And that's the really big difference between, you know, this year and last year for him.
Yeah. I agree. One thing has come up. A lot of people brought this up, by the way, was that the Ravens have been giving up. It's too easy for the other team to get in a scoring position, largely because they seem to be giving the ball up too far upfield on kickoffs. The landing zone has not been good. They've missed the landing zone. They've gone out of bounds with some. They kick in the end zone occasionally, but Loop is just having a hard time hitting the landing zone, which means you're going to be on the 35 or the 40-yard line. 35 goes in the end zone, 40 if it goes out of bounds or short. And that's not a good place to start. The other thing is he's had a lot of short kickoffs to the front of the landing zone. So if you get at the 16, 17-yard line, you're going to more likely get out past the 30, maybe even past the 35 on a lot of those plays. And that's been quite frustrating. I know the Ravens pride themselves on special teams, and Loop's been good on field goals, but he's costing the Ravens some points on kickoffs.
Yeah, I mean, when you're setting a team up at the 40-yard line, I mean, the way these kickers are, that's only, you know, two first downs, and they're in field goal range. I mean, kickers are hitting 55-yard kicks like they're 45s down.
Yep.
And so if you 20 yards and you're in field goal range, and that's, yeah, that you give up points that way.
Yeah, you know, and you're right on the money exactly with that, a 55 is the new 45 in a lot of ways. And it's, if there were no explanation for that, I'd be kind of skeptical and say, well, let's wait till December. Let's see how things go, blah, 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 blah. But I'm not that way. I think it is related to the new K balls and the you know, the ability to scuff those up differently, and the familiarity the kicker has with that ball, the comfort they have in terms of kicking it. It's just, to me, I think this is probably here to stay. I think it is something that the NFL was trying to get away from also, by the way, that they wanted to get less of scoring on field goals, more of it forced into touchdowns, which I think is the way to go, by the way. You want more exciting play, more high leverage plays, more forced fourth down, go for it. You want to have harder field goals, which means they might need to narrow the goalposts again by a foot. And really make that, you know, more difficult. It wouldn't even have to be that much. I mean, you could do it. You could narrow it by 6 inches, like the width of the goalpost on each side, and it would be significant to a kicker.
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting. Like when they instituted like the K balls and everything like that, a lot of things they did, they were trying to make it so that teams would be kicking field goals less, and like you said, trying to score more touchdowns and have more scoring that way. And it's kind of gone in the opposite direction in a lot of ways. And it's, you know, especially surprising considering, you know, 20 years ago, teams weren't going for it on fourth down the way they do now. So, I mean, the success rate that you have on fourth down should translate to, you know, more scoring opportunities and more touchdowns. So
yeah,
the fact that they're just not doing that, it's kind of interesting right there.
Yeah, that's ratcheted up offensive plays per drive. It's ratcheted up scoring. It's ratcheted up drive success rate, and it's ratcheted down number of drives per game. So the importance of each possession is at a higher level with better understanding of fourth down strategy in the NFL. It's you would not think that would advantage the kicking game. You're absolutely right. But there's a lot of situations where they kick at the end of the game, the end of the half, or in critical high leverage score moments where it's like the sacrifice bunt. It's not necessarily a good play relative to the chance of getting a touchdown or a big inning in the case of a bunt. But they still do it because of the leverage that additional score creates to either go up by two scores at an opportune time in the game or to catch up within one score, that whatever it may be.
Right.
Exactly. All right. I think we have to look at these red zone failures individually to understand what happened. I know people are going to rather have a root canal, so you're free to go and take care of that right now if you'd prefer to. But there's 6 times they got into the red zone and they only scored twice. The very first drive, they got down to the 24-yard line and then they ran 3 plays. Henry, a run left for 0. Mitchell, a run middle for 6. And then they threw the ball in or near the end zone. I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. It might have been the back of the end zone. And Eccles had a pass defense against Flowers.
Right.
Do you remember, remember the play? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I mean, it was a disappointing end to a really nice drive. You almost kind of want to, you know, to second guess now, hindsight 2020, I almost would have rather see them run on third down on that 3rd and 4 and maybe put yourself in a position where you could go for it on fourth, you know, like on a fourth and one, fourth and two, something like that, as opposed to pass. But I mean, it's yeah, just a disappointing end of the drive like that.
Yeah, very much so. And the Ravens don't really trust themselves in fourth and short, which is why they probably weren't really interested in trying to pick it up on two plays. But they had an awful lot of plays in this game where they had a third and two in this season, let's say, rather than in this game, where they're third and two or three or four. Then in the past, you know, the early Lamar teams would have never thought twice about running it. You know, they do it, you know, consistently. And they still did some of that in this game to run four first downs on third and four or whatever, with Lamar in particular taking more runs. But it's very frustrating in terms of this game that they really don't seem to trust Henry to run it twice from third and four to get anything, or even Henry and Lamar to get that done. So anyway, Eccles, who made a couple of good plays in this game, had the pass breakup on that, forced the field goal. They didn't even sniff any sort of offensive success until the Steelers had racked up 17 points to take that 17-3 lead then. Right. Very end of the half, they were in really a must-score drive because the Steelers were going to get the ball first in the second half. And they finally put together a pretty nice drive. It was a fairly long drive time-wise. Got down to the 6-yard line on third and six, and Lamar ran it in on that play for a score. That was a big sigh of fresh air in that stadium, I can tell you.
Yeah, it really did reignite the crowd right at the end of the half there. And I think it was a nice breakthrough, because I think a lot of in the first half, Lamar looked a little indecisive about whether to take off and run on a scramble or whether to pass. I mean, you know, the interception that he threw, it looked like, you know, he was going to run, and then he was like, oh, I see Ali, and he just didn't get enough air on that ball to get it over the defender. To see him even there, like, he looked like for a split second, he was a little like, should I run? Should I hold it? And then
let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
He took off, and it was the hole was wide open for an easy walk in. But yeah, I think hopefully, you know, I hope that, you know, if we really kind of see, you know, the Lamar that we're used to for the rest of the season, I almost would consider that kind of the turning point of that whole, of his whole struggles into, you know, old Lamar.
That's a bold move, Cotton. Put in the you know, that line from the Underdogs, right? What's the movie they play? Dodgeball.
Yeah. Yes. So
the stake in the ground in the middle of a loss is the turning point of the season. So that could be good. I'll go with it. So after the half, the Steelers scored again to go up 20 to 9, and then the Ravens got the ball and they did drive down the field. Finish it off with a touchdown pass to Likely on 3rd and 4, 4-yard pass. So you can notice a common theme is that they're succeeding at the last moment on these 3rd and 6, 3rd and 4 plays, as opposed to getting an explosive from outside the red zone somewhere, whatever. They have to get it right down into the goal line to have a chance to score.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, kind of, they haven't been getting as many of those big explosive runs or passes as they typically get, so a lot of these drives are kind of more plotting and, you know, taking more plays and needing to convert more third downs, and they did very well in, you know, making a big play on third down to get that touchdown.
Yeah. All right, Steelers went up then. Let's see, they went up 27-16, which was their biggest lead. After the 17-3 was their biggest lead anyway. And then the Ravens still had three more times where they got into the red zone. So the first one, they got to the 16-yard line, and this was early in the fourth quarter. Henry ran right for 1 yard. Then they had that funny play where Ali wasn't sure if he went down or not, and so he continued the play. By the way, that's a very smart play by Ali there, because if he can get the call wrong on the field, then the Steelers might have had to use their final challenge because they blew their first challenge. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a really good opportunity to deny them any further challenges in the game. But anyway, it was correctly ruled only a 5-yard completion. And then there's a 3rd and 4 came up. Critical, critical play on the left side. Bateman, I'm not sure he would have walked in for the touchdown, but he definitely would have had the first down. And he was already looking to turn the ball upfield. Ball glances off his fingertips. Just, it wasn't a question of being out of his catch radius or anything. Very easy catch, and he was in stride when he did. He just needed to secure that football, turn north, and he'd had a first down. Probably would have been tackled at about the, you know, maybe the 4-yard line or something. It'd still been first and goal from the 4, but would have been a first down. And, you know, Bateman's had a frustrating season, obviously, in a lot of ways. Nothing like last year. That was one of the low points, I would say.
Yeah, it's really rough. I mean, it was very easily caught. It was just a concentration drop. You definitely get the first down there. If he just put on a stutter step, he probably goes into the end zone really easy, because the cornerback was the only person that was covering him, was the only person that had a shot at tackling him there. And, you know, just a drop. And it's kind of indicative of what this team has been. Is, you know, I can certainly understand he's been frustrated. He gets very few targets and not, you know, a lot of big play opportunities. Like last year, he would be down the field catching a lot of big, deep balls and making a lot of big plays. And it just hasn't been the case this year to really even get that many opportunities to catch it anywhere, let alone make some big plays.
I hope there's nothing wrong with Bateman, the teammate, Bateman, the focused football player at this point. The Ravens have him signed for a long time. He signed for the Ravens through the 2029 season on what is a very team-friendly deal. But it's only team-friendly if he's actually a good player. And sure. If that has changed, that's a big frustration. And, you know, we've seen now several Ravens players over the last 15 years throw their careers away on some really bad habits. And the most recent one seems to have just happened with the suspension going into place for, I believe, the events of this offseason for Ben Cleveland. who I don't think will ever play again for the Ravens. He's suspended for three games. They have four left, and they have the playoffs. So I guess in theory, if the Ravens were really desperate, they might go back to him as a guy who would sit on the bench. But they had him inactive before this suspension anyway. So I suspect that the confidence in him has dropped to a new low, if that's even possible.
Sure. He's been inactive these last couple of games. At this point, like, obviously Emory Jones is passed him on the depth chart. It's just time to move on. Like, you have to really, you have to get younger or cheaper at that position, and probably both. And I mean, that means probably using a draft pick and, you know, trying to develop another guy that you see some potential in.
Yeah, and that's a really key point you make, because it's not just the fact that they could probably get Ben Cleveland for cheap next year, because I think they could probably get him at pretty much the same price they got him this year. He hasn't played. He's got this DUI hanging over him. I don't think there's a lot of people going to be impressed by him if he goes to their facility by anything but his size. So it's really a matter of is there a team willing to take a chance on him that's more desperate than you? But I think it probably is not. And they could bring him back for $1.3 million or whatever the vet minimum would be. But the problem is that then they use the roster spot on that. And that then you lose a big developmental opportunity for another offensive lineman. Those spots actually very important. I think more so on the offensive line than just about anywhere else, would you say? Because you're limited in terms of the number you can have. There's not a lot of rotation at the positions, but that means you have to take advantage of the players who are on the fringe of the roster, like Carson Vinson and even some of the practice squad guys. But Corey Bullock would be another example this year, and trying to develop those guys with practice as much as you can.
Right, exactly. I mean, your starting five are going to be playing pretty much every snap, or at least that's the hope. So, you know, the only opportunity that a young player has to develop on the offensive line is through practice. And, you know, Ben Cleveland is taking up second team, third team reps from, ahead of, you know, like you were saying, Bullock or, you know, another young player. And, you know, you're stunning the growth, and you've pretty much exhausted any and all potential with Ben Cleveland. Like, he is what he is at this point. He's a backup friend. He's a fringe backup offensive lineman at this point, whether it be here or in the anywhere else. And I mean, you know, it's seemingly like he's heading towards, you know, 1 foot out of the league entirely, the way it's going now. And now he's with the suspension and things.
Right. And be very different, by the way, if he was a guy who they automatically said, no problem, we've got Cleveland, you know, as soon as there was any sort of injury and they need to make moves or whatever. That guy's always been McCary in the past, was always the trump card. They would play at whatever, move the slots around and make use of his versatility. Ben Cleveland came into this year as the Ravens' most versatile offensive lineman. That's how sad this is, that he was a guy that in theory could play four positions, including center, where he had a very minimal amount of camp experience. But also right tackle, possibly in either guard spot. And they've never acted like he was an alternative to what they had at either guard spot, even though, you know, they can't be fully happy in either case with what's going on there. He was never an alternative. And Emory Jones really isn't the first alternative right now either. So, you know, obviously they're somewhat invested in the current players they have, but it's still, if the $1.35 million cost, the roster spot inert matter black backup that Cleveland gives you was there, I wouldn't have a problem with the cost if he was the obvious solution whenever you had an injury or whenever you had a performance issue, but he's just not.
No. Right. Exactly. Yeah. No. I mean, we have to throw away the, you know, two games in preseason that he did his second year in the league.
Yeah, he played some decent times in the regular season too, and I think that is so far gone now. We have to deeply discount what the value of that was
you know, 2-3 years ago. Like, it's a completely different player now. He's obviously just not that player anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, I think if he even gave a little bit of an alternative to Voorhees or Filele, they put him in there. I mean, they're 6-7 at this point. They're desperate for answers at a lot of different positions and a lot of different holes on this team. If Cleveland was an actual alternative, he would be in there. So I think the fact that he's not, and, you know, Filele takes his beating every week from the fans, and Voorhees, you know, he's up and down. But, I mean, we have so many players that are, you know, not performing as well as they could. If he was an actual alternative or could provide some kind of consistency, he'd be in there. And he's not. And he's not even active. It's not even like, him and Filele are just about even. But if Filele gets hurt, we can, you know, we have total confidence in putting him in. He's not even active in the event of one of these guys get injured. So that says all you need to say about who he is at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. Let's keep going. The next time they had the ball, they got to the Steelers 20. Ali ran left for 2 yards. Then they had two consecutive quarterback hits. So this one in the offensive line is providing some of the problem here, obviously. The first one was incomplete to Likely after Lamar scrambled around a little bit, then got hit. I think it was Watt who got the hit on that play. It might have been Lee, because it's Watt and Lee who got these two. And then another incomplete to Andrews, which this was the one to Andrews at the goal line on fourth down, I believe.
Yeah, it was fourth down.
Off his fingertips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said that ball was intended for Hopkins in the back of the end zone. I think it would have been intercepted if it got past Andrews.
Yeah, I do too. Like it, Hopkins was wide open in the back of the end zone for a second or so. When by the time Lamar threw that ball, it looked like Joey Porter would have been right there to knock it down or intercept it. Mm-hmm. And if it was intended for him, like if Andrews is in the area, you're a receiver, you try to catch that ball. And it may not have been intended for him. I doubt it was, because, I mean, Lamar threw a rocket, and you're not throwing a rocket to your tight end, you know, that's 5 yards away from you like that. So, I mean, it probably wasn't intended for him, but you can't blame Andrews for, you know, trying to catch that ball. It's just not it. That's what you do as a receiver. You see that ball, you're close enough to get your hands on it, you get your hands on it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I completely agree with that. I think I'd take the other side of the coin in terms of the velocity on that ball. Lamar kind of got up on one foot to deliver it over the defense in a way that he had, you know, takes one of these hop, skip, and a jump throws kind of thing, where he delivered the ball. It didn't look like there was a ton of mustard on the ball. Now, would it have gotten back? I don't know for sure, but it was just slightly out of the range of Andrews. I think it was going to be intercepted probably before it got to Hopkins. But part of the problem, and the reason Porter had more time to break on that football, Porter was from the outside closing the window towards the goalpost, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, he's the one. I didn't check his number on the play, but he's the one I think would have had the intercepted. Would have the interception.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. So anyway, they turn the ball back over. Could have been at the 20-yard line if Andrews doesn't make the play on the ball and knock it down. but since said they get the ball at the 8-yard line or wherever it was, they ran three plays and out, a run for one, a run for two. Great defensive play by Marlon Humphrey, not to get rubbed off the route and get off the field. So they get the ball back again after a fairly long punt. They get down to the 13-yard line, and now we're talking, there's about 2 minutes, not as more than 2 minutes left. I've got the wrong place, don't I? So, yeah, because, yeah. Yeah, so I'm
so,
I'm up.
So the fourth down after the Likely drop and Andrews tipping, the following play, they got the three and out with Marlon Humphrey, yes. And that was right before the 2 minute warning.
So the previous play after the Andrews tip, they actually had another field goal to cut the lead to 5 at 27-22, because they made it 27-19 after the Bateman drop and 27-22 after the Andrews tip drop. Andrews tip non-interception in the back of the end zone. Okay, so anyway, they get the ball back again after another three and out, incomplete on that. They get to the 13-yard line, incomplete on the reverse TD to Likely. So that was ugly. Then a Henry pass right for 8, one of the really nice plays they had inside the red zone, which almost got him a first down, but puts him at this 3rd-and-2 situation. They ran up the middle with Henry. Multiple problems. Ricard had an illegal formation on the left side because he's lined up off the line of scrimmage. He has to cover the tackle. There has to be an eligible receiver outside the tackle on each side. He didn't do it. And I don't know if it was entirely his fault because there was motion away from that side. But Brandon, with your understanding, I mean, the motioning player should have been already off the line of scrimmage and not somehow had a switch of off and on that occurred as they set to confuse right. the defense somehow, right?
Right, exactly.
So it was Ricard's penalty for sure, even though I'm not sure it was actually called on Ricard. It's just called illegal formation. And the problem with that penalty, this is the classic problem of why five-yard penalties are not all created equal. If it had just been a false start, if it had only been a false start, the Ravens would have had another chance with third and seven.
Third and seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. So that meant that the Henry RM3, which took it to fourth and five, was accepted. And so they end up with only one chance. And this was the time when they had the Andrews tip in the back of the end zone. For Hopkins. I'm sorry. I've messed up some of the order of events here, but
sure.
But that's what happened anyway. Then they got another opportunity, but had a pretty long punt. Wester, only a modest return. And then they had a big penalty flag on the punt itself, which, Ryan Minkus had some videos out there. The flag was thrown from 40 yards away, maybe, in terms of where the holding call was relative to the official.
Uh-huh.
It was, I always get the judges wrong, but it was a judge on the side. So I believe it might be the side judge, but he's way down by the punt return man threw the flag at one of the gunners, one of the jammers, basically, who was probably 40 yards from him as he threw the flag.
Yeah. excuse me. Sorry.
Hey, take your time, my friend. If you need a drink of water or anything, I can keep it going here.
All right. Yeah, no. So, I think because Western caught the ball at the 37 and they spotted at the 37. He returned it to the 43. When it's a hold, and it's during the kick, it goes back to where the punt, the returner, catches the ball. So he caught it at 37. So it's essentially like a dead ball right there. And then they move it back from there. So
16-yard foul, yeah, effectively in terms of the loss relative to that. And really did not, it's very difficult to see any kind of a hold on the play. And you won't necessarily see it on all 22. But that was frustrating play again. Mm-hmm. All right. So then on that last 2-minute drive, now, I know you wanted to talk about this very inefficient drive. Now, part of it was they had to start at the 17 yard line and they needed to go 83 yards. So that made the minute and 56 more of a factor than it otherwise would be if they had started at the 43. That's a, right. That's a very manageable field for a minute and 56.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
talk about a little bit of the inefficiency.
Even still, like you have a minute 56 and a timeout left. That's plenty of time to get down the field. They move themselves back. They got a holding call right on first down to make it first and 20. The play calling and the decision making, I guess, for Lamar to basically throw two checkdowns to receivers in the middle of the field. The first one, Ali caught it for like 4 yards, and then they had the throw to Zay Flowers, which I think was, either 1 yard or 1 yard down the field or right at the line of scrimmage, and he ran for another 4 or 5 yards before getting tackled in bounds. Those two plays are, unacceptable. Like, if you're going to throw a checkdown, the checkdown guy has to be able to get out of bounds, because the defense will take a 5-yard gain and have that clock rolling every time in this situation. And then you had those two plays, and then you had Lamar with the scramble to get the first down, but he also stayed in bounds. So you basically, and then they, in between all of these plays, it took 20 seconds to to get the snap from for two of these plays to go. So they basically wasted a minute and 16 seconds to go literally a net of 12 yards down the field.
It was really bad. Flowers, I think, was set up on the wrong side of the field on one play, had to be moved, and that cost him about 12, 15 seconds probably on that alone. So the ugly play. Anyway, they didn't even come close. They got the ball, did get the ball down to the 30-yard line eventually, so didn't even get to the red zone on what looked like a drive they might start at the 43-yard line. They came up very short. So frustrating final couple of minutes there. Frustrating fourth quarter that they couldn't catch up despite all the defense, all the opportunities the defense manufactured.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you know, like, I think that, you know, this game is completely different with between the two calls between Likely and Rodgers. And I mean, even the call with Travis Jones on the field goal, that's 4 points. So that, I mean, that completely changes the game.
I mean, they kicked for the win.
You're driving for a field goal as opposed to a touchdown, and you at least got into Loop's range whenever the drive fizzled out.
So. Well, it's actually the previous drive, the previous drive that got to fourth down, they would have kicked a field goal to presumably win the game. So
that too. So
yeah, that's just unbelievably frustrating. But I don't want to go down that road. It's a dark path, and we need to get through a lot of our remaining stuff here. We talked about a lot of the relative usage. I want to save the Lamar stuff for the second part of the show and maybe just talk a little bit about some of the other snap division or whatnot for the running backs. Ali got 27 snaps. There's been a lot of complaining about how much time Ali is playing. If you don't like Ali on the field, you really might not like next week, because the Ravens are going to be back to the two running back system that they played last year. Mitchell, if he doesn't play, it'd be a huge loss if he doesn't. But the Ravens did not. Okay, I'll ask a question. I'll ask it this way. In what week did the Ravens first have an RB3 carry in 2024? Meaning somebody who is not Henry or Hill, when did they get their very first carry in 2024?
You mean in 24 last year?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, it was something crazy. It was like week 10 or 11 or something, wasn't it?
Okay, so week 10, Mitchell was on the field for a snap. And then week 11, I think he was on the field for another snap. And he might have had a carry, but then it got reversed by penalty. Anyway, official carry was week 15 for an RB3.
Wow. So yeah.
No Ricard, no nothing else. I mean, it was just crazy.
That's wow. And I mean, you know, people that, you know, want to talk about Ali getting on, he's earned the role as the passing running back. So he's done, you know, pretty well. Like, I think that first game where he earned that role, he played excellent in doing pass blocking for Lamar. He hasn't been as good, but I mean, he's been a fine pass blocker for the running back position. And one, you can't keep Henry in on all of these snaps anyway, even on passing downs, but you have to be able to have, you know, spell Henry, because you still want him to be running the ball, so you can't necessarily wear him down by pass blocking a whole lot. And when you're passing a lot and he's making blocks and everything, he's perfectly fine to be out there. You're on mute.
Yeah, they missed so many opportunities with Henry in this game. Obviously, one of the big missed plays in this game was pass off the left side, little swing pass. Nobody's in front of Henry. And it's basically the same play as last week that he missed Mitchell on. And it's a huge play left on the field. Either one could have been a house call. I think both of them were going to be over 20 yards. Just ugly, ugly football happening there. But yeah, Ali had a lot of set and shit blocks in this game, 7 of each. Now, I don't score him separately. We'll get into the offensive line scoring in the second half, but I don't score the eligible receivers because there's not enough plays to make it really worth it. But he had 14, 7 sets and 7 chips in this game, which is it's probably the most of the year by any eligible receiver for the Ravens. I'd have to go back and confirm that, but 7 sets and 7 chips. The Ravens really overcommitted to what was fairly frugal pass rush from the Steelers in this game, and they got a lot of really high quality chip blocks that were good in particular. But PFF did not score him well on his pass blocking. I'd have to go back and look individually to see where were the couple of plays that really didn't work out for him. But he's definitely a high effort guy. I've been very impressed with that part of his pass blocking.
Yeah, yeah, and it's encouraging for him to you know, kind of develop and earn this playing time that he's had, because I mean, now you're making Justice Hill kind of in a potential cap casualty in the offseason, because I think he's got a relatively high cap number for a backup quarterback, backup running back, and Ali's still on very cheap, so he's got potential there.
Right, so you save $3.25 million. It does make all of the times, and Voss and I probably had Ali cut every week for about the first 10 weeks of this season in terms of you know, being ready to let him go. But it's true. He's ended up having real value of the Ravens. I think he'll have potentially more value next year. He brings a lot of what Hill does to the game too. I mean, he can catch the football a little bit. Hill's probably the better pass blocker, but Ali looks like he's a high effort guy too, which you really like to see. And I don't doubt that they'll go the cheap route to save the $3.25 million in cap value and develop a new running back who's in year one again pair with the other three. What do they do with Mitchell? This question was asked of me, is what do they do about Mitchell for next year? Do they tender him?
He's a restricted free agent. I doubt that they, even the low tender, I doubt that they tender him. I think what a lot of times DaCosta is done with a guy that you want to bring back, but you're not going to bring back. I think it's a $3 million tender. Even the low tender is like $3 million or something. As he works out a deal with that guy, you know, for less than what that low tender would be. So I'm guessing that's probably what you're going to do with Mitchell. I really like Mitchell. Whenever he's on the field, he's an exciting player, but he's also proven that he can't stay on the field long enough to really be a dynamic playmaker, you know, consistently. So, I mean, you have, like, I'd love to see him come back. I'd love to see him, you know, if he's going to, you know, stay healthy and be a playmaker, I'd love to see, obviously you'd love this for it to be here. Yeah, I don't think you bring him back at, you know, the tender, and I think you just gotta you know, work out a deal to bring him back for a little bit less.
Yeah, he said he's been very much worth the money as a running back for his 3 years. His career success rate is 60.2%. That number is like I think Bijan Robinson set the all-time record for 300 plus carries for a guy at 60.something% last year. So it gives you an idea. The all-time record was Gus Edwards at 57.4% when he left the Ravens. That's the all-time career record in it. Mm-hmm. So he's had 93 carries as a Raven for 7.0 yards per attempt. He's been worth every dollar and more that they've paid him so far through 3 years. And yet that still has to be the question, is what can you do for me in 26? And I don't, if I'm Mitchell, I don't think I'm signing a 2-year deal with the Ravens. I don't think I would do it. I'd try and sign a 1-year deal, and I try and maximize the dollars. And that's probably going to be the Ravens are going to be a place where, you know, he can really showcase himself with a healthy Lamar to get the biggest contract he possibly can after 26. And there may be some team that's willing to say, hey, you know what? Give me Keaton Mitchell 2 years or 3 years, $12 million or something right now. And he might jump on a deal like that.
Yeah, that'd be great for him. Yeah. I'd be sad to see him go, but I mean, he's got to be able to prove that he can stay healthy. I mean, it's almost kind of indicative. He had that long run, and he literally got injured on that run. I couldn't tell exactly if it was during the run, and that's why he looked like he slowed down at the end, or whether it was on the tackle. But I mean, when he hit that hole, I was there. I was like, he's gone. And I was shocked that the I can't remember if it was corner or safety, whoever caught up to him got to him.
It didn't make any sense.
He was gone. Yeah.
The number that breaks into my head, I said this on the defensive show too, but it's a joke worth telling twice because I'm sure the quants out there will get it. The number that jumps into my head is 1.414, which is the square root of 2. That's the relative distance that guy has to cover going diagonally on a 1 unit by 1 unit square, effectively. Mm-hmm. So it's incredibly frustrating that he got caught on that play from basically even, you know, and he had to move 10 yards forward, and that safety had to move 14 yards to push him out of bounds. You could tell there's a piano on his back at that point around the 20 yard line. He was almost limping at that point to continue his track. So that's, to me, I think that's pretty clearly where the injury occurred.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you're the Ravens, you probably have to draft a running back, you know, in the mid to late rounds this coming year. I mean, Henry's getting older, and I don't think Ali, even though he's been a valuable piece, is not necessarily a guy you really don't have anybody that you can lean on if Henry were to ever get hurt. So, I mean, you know, we're looking at that possibility, you know, this game coming up or however many games Mitchell is out. You know, if Henry goes down, there's really not anybody that you want to see carry the ball 15 times in a game. So.
All right, we have to call it here. We'll get to the second show. We'll talk a little bit about Lamar's game first and how he looked against the pass rush and whatnot. Get into the offensive line, talk about some individual skill position players. And we'll save time because we won't do MVPs in the second half of a show where they lost. But Brandon, always great talking football with you, my friend. Tell folks where they can talk with you online if they have a question for you.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking Ravens. And yeah,
hit me all up. Right. Other folks out there, please make use of hashtag film study mailbag, either for your questions you want on the offense, defense, or Friday morning GM, which is why I usually post most of those questions. Or if you just want me to answer with a 1 to 3 minute video, I'm trying to open that up as a new format for content delivery. I'd love to use your question for one of those. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Are we exposed? This is what every security team is wondering. But with vulnerabilities scattered across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos, the truth is out of reach, and attackers know it. There's a better way. Unify to defy risk with Tenable AI-powered exposure management. Tenable brings together all your security data and exposures in one unified view, giving you the attacker's map and revealing the critical paths and weaknesses they can exploit. Now your teams can prioritize intelligently, move decisively, and collaborate without friction. Tenable turns scattered work into a single proactive force. Instead of chasing noise, your team knows where to focus, gaining clarity, control, and speed to reduce cyber risk with confidence. Learn more at tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.